Hello, and again, welcome to the Labyrinth Library podcast. How are you this week? I hope, as always, I hope that you're well. Things here are good, but busy. You know, it's coming up on the end of the year. We only have a couple more weeks left before winter break, and we're trying to get as much stuff done as possible. Because you know how it is, you remember how it is. You leave stuff off, you got winter break, everything just flies out your head during that time. Come back in January, and nobody remembers a thing. So, trying to get stuff finished to get a little bit of closure before everybody runs off for the winter holidays. But other than that, things are pretty normal. Nothing terrible, nothing amazing. We're on an even keel right now, which is good. I like that. So why don't we get into this week's book? Now, I said last week that this book is an excellent primer on political science, which is true, and it helps if you have a benevolent supercomputer on your side, which is also true. I did not get any correct guesses this week, unfortunately, but that's all right. These things happen. So the book that we're talking about this week, it is a Robert Heinlein book. We haven't talked about him in a little while, and it is one of his more famous ones. It is The Moon is a Harsh Mistress. Now here's a question for you. You may have heard it before, I don't know, but what would you do if you had access to the greatest supercomputer ever built? A computer so complex and intricate that it finally gains full consciousness, and only you knew about it. Would you use it for your own nefarious purposes and hack your way to riches? Would you try to teach it how to be human? Would you tell it jokes? Or would you use it to start a revolution that frees your people in the lunar colonies from the yoke of Terran oppression? Well, Manuel Garcia O'Kelly Davis never really meant for that last one to happen. One of Luna's best computer technicians, Manny's philosophy was, keep mouth shut when it comes to matters political, and never considered the political fate of the moon to be something that he needed to worry about. When he attends a meeting of lunar dissidents, though, people protesting against the rule of the Earth-based lunar authority, he goes more out of curiosity than cause. An attack by authority troops drives him together with a lifelong revolutionary, a woman named Wyoming Knott, and an anarchist professor, Bernardo de la Paz, and together they hatch a plan to take down the lunar authority and make Luna into a sovereign nation above Earth. Now to do so, they will need the help of Mike, the world's first and only sentient computer. He knows the odds, he can run the scenarios. With Mike on their side, the people of Luna can gain their independence and create a new nation in the grand tradition of old. A friend of mine, as I alluded to last week, said that this was the best political science textbook that she had ever read, and in many respects she is right. The book packs a lot of social philosophy into 300 pages, and Heinlein requires you to be pretty quick on the uptake, as usual. From Manny's clipped way of narrating the story to all the new lingo and concepts that are necessary for lunar life, the reader really needs to pay close attention in order to get the full impact of what's going on in the book. In a way, this book is Heinlein asking the question, how do new nations begin? Now, historically, there are two ways, top-down and bottom-up. In the first case, a person or people of strength brings a group of citizens to become a political entity. In the second, the people themselves rise up to overthrow their former masters. Now, most revolutions are a mix of the two, really, and Luna's is no exception. The very charismatic Adam Selene, which is Mike in disguise, of course, and the brilliant professor managed to bring the people of Luna together to rid themselves of the lunar authority. Now, what makes it really interesting is that the book is pretty much a how-to book on insurgency and revolution. They work out an improvement on the traditional cell system of conspiracy, how to make it as stable and secret as possible, while still maintaining reliable communications. They figure out how to involve people in the revolution indirectly, harnessing the energies of everyone from children to old people. Working against a better armed and more powerful enemy, Luna's revolution is a textbook model of how to overthrow your oppressors and gain your freedom. Of course, once you have your freedom, what do you do with it? How do you run your new country, and how do you make sure that your freedom can be maintained? How do you build a government and write a constitution and establish trade and do all the other little things that you have to happen if you want a country all your own? What's more, Heinlein puts forth a new society that is radically different from the ones we know now, and by necessity, of course. I mean, with drastically different demographics and gravity, life on Luna cannot follow the same rules as life on Earth. This new life, then, includes a near reverence for women, marriages that span not only multiple partners but multiple generations, and a spirit of individualism that would make the most grizzled pioneer proud. Life on the moon, as the title implies, is not easy. Many of those who come to Luna do not survive, and those who do, they become the backbone of a new nation that will one day become the crossroads of the solar system. It's a really dense read, but it is fun once you get used to the narrator's mode of speech. Manny often leaves off pronouns in articles, making him sound very choppy and direct, and a lot of it is done in speeches and Socratic dialogue between the professor and whoever is unlikely enough to get in his way. I'd say the greater part of this book is a discussion of how to have a revolution from the point of view of the moon, and a look at how Heinlein thinks a society should be ordered. Now, other than being very narrative-heavy, which modern readers might find a little bit tiring, there is one point about the book that didn't quite sit right with me. It didn't ruin the book, necessarily, but it put a great big asterisk next to everything that Heinlein was trying to say. And that asterisk was Mike. All right, now Mike is a truly marvelous AI. He is not only self-aware and blessed with a rather rudimentary sense of humor, but he's tied into all of Luna's main systems. His processing speed and his memory are exceptional, and while he doesn't really care one way or another about rebelling against his owners, he does think that organizing a rebellion might be an entertaining diversion. He's a good character, really, but in all honesty, he's entirely too powerful. All the problems that traditionally plague conspiracies and undergrounds and rebellions, they're solved by Mike. He knows the probabilities of success, and he can run thousands of scenarios in a moment. He's able to set up a moon-wide communication system that's completely secure. He can tap into the Lunar Authority's database while at the same time keeping the rebellion's data secret. What's more, he can be trusted to know everything about everyone in the group. He cannot be bribed or drugged or forced to name names under interrogation. He can organize the bombardment of Earth with pinpoint accuracy, bring down attacking ships, and organize attacks all over the moon. With Mike at their side, the rebels couldn't help but win. And I found that to be kind of a hollow victory, in a narrative sense, anyway. I mean, if this were real world, I would say use every tool you've got, but this is a story, it's a little bit different. I mean, I kept waiting for Mike to be compromised, you know? His power disconnected or his actual intelligence uncovered by the Terran authorities. Or for him to just change his mind about helping the rebels. I mean, one way or another, I wanted the rebels to win Luna without the help of their omniscient supercomputer conspirator. I mean, as it is, Mike pretty much delivers the moon to its people, and then he vanishes without a trace. I mean, that's not to say the human element isn't necessary. Even Mike couldn't have won independence without them. But I would rather have seen a wholly human revolution. Other than that, though, it's a good read, and it's a book that ties into a lot of Heinlein's other works. Many concepts that are key to Heinlein's vision of the world are in this book. The freedom of the individual to direct his or her own life, the benefits of polygamy over monogamy, and of course the notion of Tannstoffel. There ain't no such thing as a free lunch, which is arguably one of the governing principles of the universe. In this book, Heinlein asks the reader to do more than just enjoy a good story. He demands that the reader think about the message as well. And that, of course, is what makes Heinlein one of the greats. So if you are looking for some essential science fiction and you like your politics rough and tumble, check the book out. Let me give you a quote from Professor Bernardo de la Paz. And this is something, if you read enough Heinlein, you will discover that he tends to put himself in a lot of his books, usually as a cranky old intellectual. In Starship Troopers, he was the college professor. In other ones, he is Jubal Harshaw. In Stranger in a Strange Land, he is someone whose name I cannot remember at the moment, but I'm sure someone will tell me. Point is, Heinlein usually puts himself in a lot of these books. And in this case, the Heinlein analog is Professor de la Paz, and he says, "At one time, kings were anointed by deity, so the problem was to see to it that deity chose the right candidate. In this age, the myth is the will of the people, but the problem changes only superficially." Which is true in its own weird way. I mean, we have an election coming up in the States next year, and you can already see it's going nuts, you know? You don't really get the feeling that the people are choosing anything right now. It's just the media is choosing and the party is choosing. And I don't know. It's the early days yet. So I have much more to complain about as time goes on. But it's a fun read. Check it out. If you need to read some Heinlein, that's a very good one to hit. And maybe, who knows, maybe someday we will have a colony on the moon. Maybe the, and I hope that the citizens of the moon colony and eventually the moon nation pay homage to the man who saw it coming. All right, so for next week, what are we doing? Next week, I thought we would do a graphic novel. Not a comic book, of course. We must be snooty here. But it is a graphic novel, and it's a graphic novel that has recently been turned into a very popular TV series. Okay? There we go. That's all I'm giving you, because I think you can do it. I don't think there are a whole lot of graphic novels that have been turned into TV series recently. So this is recently. I think it's in its second season now. So tell me if you know what it is. Tell me if the show's any good, too. I haven't watched it, so we'll see. But that is it for now, I think. I hope that you enjoy yourself and do something fun. I have Christmas cards to send out, and I'm really late and behind on those. And that's it. So I will talk to you all again next week. A text version of this review will be up on the blog, thelablib.org, along with any relevant links I can think of. If you have anything you want to say or any suggestions you'd like to make, please leave a comment and let me know. If you have a book you would like to recommend, I would be happy to hear it. If you'd like to send me an email, send it to labyrinthlibrary@gmail.com. And if you like what you hear, please give a review on iTunes, become a fan on Facebook, or follow LabLib on Twitter. This podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license, so feel free to share it, but please don't sell it or change it. The music is courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at www.incompetech.com. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week. And until then, keep reading.